And welcome. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones. With us on our phone line today, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, Bruce Helmer. Peg is off today, and we are going to talk about adult children moving back into their parents' house. Ah! Bill Cosby. Bill, it's been a joke, but it's also a big reality for a lot of folks, right, Bruce?
Susie Jones, thank you for that wonderful lead-in. Yeah, this is maybe more prevalent than listeners realize. So we're going to talk about what we call helping boomerang children. Mm. And before I dive into the concept of the boomerang children, I want to start with, we've talked a lot on this program over the years about what we call the sandwich generation. Mm-hmm. And let me define that and give boomerang children a little bit of context here. So when we talk about sandwich generation, we're referring to baby boomers who are financially helping aging parents and simultaneously helping children that maybe haven't fully launched. And so boomerang children is part of this, haven't launched our adult children yet. But the reason it's so significant, I think, for everybody and our economy in general, is that this phenomenon is causing baby boomers maybe to not prepare for their own retirement, to be able to retire when they want to, with the income that they want to, and concerns about, you know, running out of money before they run out of breath. Because, and again, you have loved ones in your family, whether it's children or parents. You want to be, you know, you want to help them. You love them. You have the economic wherewithal maybe to help them. And so you want to do that, but you have to look at the impact on you in helping these people. So boomerang children specifically that we're talking about today, and I would even differentiate that between kids that just aren't launched yet, because people listening right now, you probably have kids maybe in their 20s that haven't left yet, that are still at home. Mm-hmm. Maybe don't have a job or don't have a job where they make the kind of money that they can afford to be independent. But the boomerang that we're talking about, this phenomenon, is kids that left but came back for whatever reason.
Change the locks.
Yeah, lock the doors. Yeah, they come back. Mm-hmm. And so more and more adult children are actually returning home. There's a recent survey that was done, a 24 survey, found that 46% of parents have had adult children, and they define adult between the ages of 18 and 35, move back home with them. 46% last year. Now, you compare that to 2023, it was around 35%. And I think even the 35% number was shockingly high, but now it's up to almost half. So, again, listeners right now, people listening to the show, many of you probably relate to this. You've experienced this. And by the way, if you have a story to tell of your own personal experience, if it happened to you, what you did, how you're handling it, feel free to chime in today, 651-461-9226. We'll have plenty of time for questions and your comments on this issue. And in a different survey that, in addition to the one that found how many kids are coming back home, a quarter of parents have admitted they weren't financially prepared to take on their kids coming back, take on this burden. So we're going to take a closer look at the increase of adult kids who graduated high school and or college, have been living independently, and ended up returning home, and what it means and what we can do about it. So in
all
terms
right.
of why this – I'm sorry, Susie. You had,
no, I just want to make sure people are listening to us today and – thinking about their situations, and if they have a question, some tips, as it were. I know we're going to talk about the ramifications of it, but also if someone is struggling, our number is 651-461-9226, and I know you mentioned that, but 651-461-9226. And you were just going to launch in, Bruce, to the causes of this?
Yeah, kind of why it's happening, and then I'm going to give people hopefully some advice on how to handle it as well. But yeah, thank you for getting that out there, because we are definitely going to have time today for listener questions, listener comments. So there's a lot of reasons why it's happening. One of the biggest ones, I think, and we've talked about this on the program before, is the increase in education, the increase in college costs. So on the one hand, we encourage our children to go out and get an education because there's all kinds of statistical data that those that get a college education command a higher salary in their adult life than those that don't get a college education. Now, that's very broad. I know some people that don't have a college degree that they're doing very well, thank you very much. But statistically speaking, you're more employable and you'll command higher salary if you get a college education. At what cost? So how many of these kids now are trying to be an adult, and in addition to their other expenses, rent and car payment and all the other things that young people have to spend money on, now they've got this student loan payment. So most kids that move back home, the reason that they cite is they just can't afford to make it independently. And Susie, what I kind of do when I advise clients on this, and again, it's not my job to tell anybody else how to be a parent. There's no right or wrong answers, but my own philosophy as a parent, and then kind of the advice I give to clients that are struggling with, you know, kids that aren't launched, you have to look at, I think, are they in this position through no fault of their own? They're trying really hard. They're working really hard. They're good at their job. Or if they're unemployed, they're really looking for a job, versus the kid that sleeps till noon, gets up and lays on the couch and plays video games all day. I would be less apt to help them.
Yeah.
If their wounds are self-inflicted, at some point, some tough love, you got to say, look, you got to get out of here. You can't just, you know, sleep on the couch the rest of your life at our house. So, oftentimes kids find themselves in a position where they have to move back home, and they're really doing everything right. And the conditions of society today with inflation, college loans, they just can't make it. Other reasons cited are convenience, close family, love of family members, want to spend more time together. That's what the surveys found. But I think at the end of the day, most people don't live at home as adults because they want to or because they love the family so much. They end up doing it because it's an economic reality that they need to. So I've got three things for people to think about if this has happened to you, if you have an unlaunched child or a child that moved back home. Number one, set boundaries and expectations. It's very important to communicate. Again, no matter how old we are or how old our children are, they're always our children, and we love our children unconditionally, and we want to help them. And if they need help and they want to move back home, we're probably not going to change the locks and lock the door.
Okay.
We're going to let them in. But set boundaries and communicate and make it very, very clear. This is not a permanent arrangement. Statistics show that 3/4 of parents don't set any expectations with their adult boomerang children. And one of the biggest mistakes you can make is not to have a timeline or set guidelines of how much support you can afford to give and for how long. So it's okay if kids need to come back, but it's not ad infinitum. It's not forever. You got to tell them you need to get on your feet in such and such a time. I can't afford to do this forever. And then you can negotiate or determine each situation is going to be a little bit different. But are they living there completely rent-free, or do they pay some sort of small rent? Do they assist with paying for groceries and utilities and other expenses that you have? Do they contribute? And again, there's no right or wrong answer there. In some cases, maybe they can't afford to do anything. In some cases, maybe they can afford to help a little bit. But you work that out, determine what your agreement is, and then stick to that agreement. It's even suggested you have something in writing that if you move back home, here's the maximum time you can stay. Here's what you're expected to contribute. And again, that's a tough one because once a kid has been independent and then they move back in with mom and dad, they're going to take the attitude that I'm an adult. You don't get to tell me what to do. But mom and dad are going to say, look, you're living under my roof. Mm-hmm. You're going to, go by my rules. If you don't like it, you can move back out again. But again, you can eliminate a lot of hard feelings and a lot of financial negative ramifications if you just communicate up front and, again, set boundaries and expectations and then follow through on that. So that's number one. Number two, you have to make sure you safeguard your own financial well-being. You can't sabotage, torpedo your own ability to retire when you want with the income you want. So you have to look at your own situation and understand realistically how much can you afford to help these kids. You don't want to increase your debt supporting adult children. You don't want to drain your emergency fund. Be careful co-signing loans. That's a big one that I've seen through the years, that, you know, a parent maybe isn't taking on an immediate financial obligation, but they co-sign a loan that comes back to haunt them years later, and they're responsible for paying, you know, an adult kid's debt, and or it affects their credit rating because that loan, you know, shows up on their credit report. So be very, very careful that in your desire to help your kids, and again, I understand no matter how old they are, they're always your children and you always want to help, but sometimes loving your children is saying, look, you got to stand on your own 2 feet. You can't rely on me forever. And that doesn't mean you don't love your kids. So helping boomerang children, number one, set boundaries and expectations. Number two, safeguard your own financial well-being. And number three, help your children be able to become financially independent. This one, you know, so often and again, this is a constant theme on the show, we don't communicate as a society. We don't educate. We don't talk about money. It's almost like in a lot of families, it's taboo that you don't talk about money. But you need to talk to kids about financial things, and you need to teach them and coach them. And that's easy to say. It's harder to do because, number one, a lot of the parents maybe don't have really good financial planning habits either. So how can you pass on what you don't know yourself? And the other thing is, and again, I've talked about this a lot over the years, to start to teach your kid how to be financially independent doesn't start when they're an adult. It starts when they're a child. It starts when they're 5, 6, 7 years old. I don't think I'm a perfect parent, and I don't mean to imply that I am. But one of the things I always did with my kids is they had an allowance when they were young, and it wasn't a reward, or it wasn't just to be overly generous. It was to teach them about money and what they did with the allowance, and they had to make financial decisions on what they did with that money. Did they put it in their bank account? If they want something special, I've told the story on the show many times. I remember the time when my son was probably 8 years old or so, and there was some new video game that he wanted, and he wanted me to buy it for him. I said, well, it's not Christmas. It's not your birthday. If you want that game, you got to buy it with your money. So we went to the store, and, you know, he ended up doing it. And again, this was reflection back to me that that these things were working. He tried to negotiate with me. How about I pay half and you pay half? And I said, no. It's not your birthday. If you want this, you got to buy it.
Smart kid.
After negotiating, he's pretty good as an adult too now with money. But after negotiating, then he did a cost-benefit analysis, and he looked at the game he thought he wanted, which was new out in the stores, and it was like double or triple some other games that he saw that had been out for a while and the price had come down. And he ended up playing 2 or 3 games for the price that the one game that he thought he wanted, he would have had to pay for that. And he rationalized that, you know, that price will probably come down and then get this game later. So again, teach children about money. And now again, if they're boomerang and they're already back home, you can't start working with them, you know, when they're kids, but it's never too late. So they need to understand how to manage money. They need to understand budgeting. They need to understand what their expenses are every month, what their income is on their job, and how much does their income exceed their expenses by, or are their expenses higher than their income, which might be the case, which is why they ended up coming back home. They need to be smart about debt. They need to be smart about credit cards. We talk about this all the time also. Credit cards are fine as a convenience item to go buy something, but if you go buy something on a credit card, and when that invoice comes, if you don't have the money to pay the bill, you shouldn't have bought that thing. You couldn't afford it in the first place, because now you're carrying a balance to go buy something. You're paying interest on a credit card. You're paying interest, and the cost of that you bought goes up dramatically when you add interest costs to it. And most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, these purchases that young people make are not things that they really need. It's things that they want. And again, we have, I think, a generation that wants immediate gratification, and that might be the cause of some of the financial problems also. So we need to work with these boomerang kids to establish clear financial goals, be smart about money, know how much they're making, know how much they're spending, where is the spending frivolous, what are things that they can cut. And again, it's easier said than done, but it's doable, and it's never too late. And when they're home, again, they should have household roles, they should have financial responsibilities, help them start to build confidence, help them start to be independent while they're living with you. You can do this teaching while they're back, after they came home, and try to help them get relaunched again as quickly as possible. So the bottom line here is, we know this is happening. We know it's probably going to continue to happen based on all the things I just mentioned, the cost of living, student loans, the difficulty of kids to get good-paying jobs, and so forth. And it's okay if you love your kid. It's okay to help them out and let them come back for a period of time. But it should not sabotage your own financial well-being, and it should not go on forever. Make sure you and your kid have an understanding, have a game plan, and how are you gonna bring this thing to an end at some point in time. And Susie, I know we got a couple minutes left yet in this half of the show, so let's start to get listeners involved. Maybe somebody has a question, maybe somebody has a personal story of their adult child moving back in and how they handled it and what worked and what didn't work, and we'll let listeners drive from now until the end of the first half and the entire second half.
That sounds great. 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. A texter wrote a little bit ago, I changed my Wi-Fi password to Fort Courage. That it's kind of funny, like do things to force them to take part in the family spending. How about giving your kids a credit that helps them to get out from their parents' home? How about giving kids credit? Go ahead.
Yep, that's a great one. I'm going to change it just a little bit. So one of the things that I've always been an advocate for in terms of helping our kids is what we call an intra-family loan. So let's go back to student loan. Let's say a kid's got this student loan, and it's at 6% interest, and the monthly payment is really a strain on them. Well, maybe as a parent, you can afford to pay that loan for them, and they can pay you back, but you can set it up on more favorable terms and conditions. You can either extend the amortization period and or reduce the interest rate and make that less onerous to them on a monthly basis. They're still going to take the responsibility for paying off that debt. You're just going to make it a little bit easier. So a lot of parents maybe have the economic wherewithal to lend money to their kids rather than just give money that's never coming back. Now, I also know, I'm not completely naive here, that oftentimes parents make a loan and they end up writing it off as a bad debt or as an uncollectible loan because the kid never does pay them back. But again, I believe that most people, most kids want to be independent. I don't think they want to have to rely on mom and dad. I think there's a, you know, I think they're probably frustrated as much as mom and dad are. They're probably disappointed. They're probably depressed, and they want to make their own way. They just need a little bit of help, and maybe they can be relaunched. But I think they want to be launched. I think they want to pay mom and dad back. I think they want a handout. Again, I'll reference my own kids. I've been very blessed. I have a 31-year-old daughter and a 29-year-old son, and they've been fully launched for a long time. They don't need my help. They don't ask for my help, which frankly makes me want to help them even more. My daughter and I actually had this conversation last year. She got married and was father of the bride. I wanted to do a lot of things, And she's like, Daddy, you don't need to do this. And I'm like, well, I want to. I have the economic wherewithal to do it. You're going to inherit money from me when I die, but that won't give me any joy. I'll be dead. Let me do this now. It makes my heart happy, and I want to help. But I probably would have been less likely to want to provide help, whether it's a wedding or whatever it is, if they were always had their hand out asking for money. But my kids don't. I know I'm lucky. I know I'm blessed. I know not everybody's in that situation, but I feel very fortunate. But again, I'm not telling anybody how to parent. They're always your kids. You always love your kids, no matter how old they are, no matter how old you are. But if you love them, help them be financially responsible and help them be independent and help them get launched again.
All right. It is 29 minutes past the hour. 651-461-9226. A lot of text questions already coming in. A lot of text stories as well, Bruce, from people wanting to share their own experience with this particular topic of boomerang kids and the sandwich generation. We'll be back after this short break with more of those questions here on Your Money. Welcome back to the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones along with Bruce Helmer, and we are talking about boomerang children, adult children who move out, become, you know, pay their bills, and then for some reason or another they have to move back home. And we've invited you to be part of the show at 651-461-9226. Bruce, welcome back. Anything you want to get to before we start taking calls and texts, questions?
No. Just really quickly a recap in case people joined us late. We talked about the three things I gave in terms of advice for if you have a boomerang child is, number one, set boundaries and expectations. It's okay to help your kids, but this is not a permanent solution. Number two, safeguard your own financial well-being. And then number three, help your kids learn to be financially independent on their own. And we'll add a number four. This was Susie's idea, not mine. Change the locks on your doors.
You're funny. Oh, dear.
Let's get listeners involved, Susie.
Yeah, okay. Well, Sue's on our line from calling today from Oak Grove, Minnesota. Hi, Sue. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you.
Yeah, good of you to come on. What was your comment or your question?
Well, we definitely were in this situation a few years ago. We had our 30-year-old daughter move back in after a tough breakup, and we want to help her out. So she moved back home in her childhood bedroom. She wasn't, you know, thrilled about it herself, but she didn't have a lot of choices. And we are financially able to allow her. We were financially and still are able to allow her to do that. Mm-hmm. After about 6 months of moping around, and, you know, she has a job. She has a full-time job. I sat her down and said, hey, what's your plan? And she said, well, I really don't have one. I said, well, we're going to make one. So line by line, I said, I need to know, and I want to help you with where your expenses are. And we went through her insurance. We went through everything that could possibly be paid in her future and made sure she was enrolled into her her match at work and everything that you need to do as an adult, and started looking around for an apartment and figured out what that expense was going to be, which they're quite expensive. And after that, we had her start paying us what that apartment would cost. And we took that money and put in a savings account for her. And after about 2 years, we had accumulated quite a nice amount of money. She knew she could afford it. And we said, now you're ready to go.
Aww.
So we practiced it, ready to go. She had a nice savings account to launch her back out into adulthood. And she's good to go now.
Oh, that's a great story, isn't it, Bruce?
Sue, that is so awesome. That you know, we've been on the air a little over 30 minutes today, and that was more profound and more impactful and more insightful than anything I said through the whole show so far. That was a great real-life example. I think you and I think you handled it perfectly, and you also brought up something that I should have and didn't. You know, we in the first half of the show, we talked about reasons why this is happening, and I should have mentioned divorce is a big one. So a young couple in their 20s or 30s that are making it, that are okay together when they have two incomes coming in, something happens to that relationship, whether it's divorce or whether it's just a parting of the ways of the significant other. Maybe you weren't married. Two people that can make it together suddenly are alone and find that they can't make it alone financially. So that's a great example of something I didn't even bring up, and that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. And the way you handled it, Sue, thank you for sharing that story. That was so good. I hope I'm sure all the people listening got something beneficial from that. That you guys, you did it perfectly. That was awesome.
Yeah, I was thinking too along that line, that she had the courage and the gentle nature to be able to have that conversation, because, you know, sometimes kids at home are growly and grouchy and unreceptive to things. So that was a great story. All right, the next one, let's see. My son moved back home many years ago saying he would be there 2 months. 8 months later, he did move out. He paid the internet bill. That was this person's comment there. Good morning, longtime listener here who has learned so much from your Sunday morning program and wealth enhancement. Our child, considering moving back to the Twin Cities, we've offered the opportunity to move in with us for a year to get on top of their student loan debt. If they do take us up on our offer, we will indeed set boundaries and expectations and a time frame. How important is that time frame, Bruce, to all of this?
Yeah, I think that's critical. And I mentioned it in the first half of the show, but I probably didn't accentuate it as much as I could have. If you leave this thing open-ended, and again, I don't think most kids really want to be back home and want to be dependent on mom and dad. I think they would like to be independent. But if you don't set a deadline, if you just leave that open-ended, it's pretty easy. Like the texter said, it was going to be 2 months and it turned into 8 months. It's really easy to have that happen. Now, in Sue's narrative, she really didn't get proactive with her daughter until after about 6 months. But I think based on what her daughter went through, the emotional consequences of a breakup, I think that was probably, you know, a good way to handle it, because she might not have been ready to have that tough conversation right when she was moving in. She was still emotionally devastated from the breakup of her relationship, and she needed some time to heal from that. So every situation is going to be different. And again, every parent has a different amount of, you know, ability to help their kids financially. But I think setting a deadline, whether it's right at the beginning or after they've been there for a while, you know, the way Sue said it, sat her down. What's your plan? I don't have one. Well, let's make one. That was just brilliant and just very sensitive and very appropriate. And again, kids are not, generally speaking, kids are not going to react negatively to that type of honest heart-to-heart loving conversation that we just want to help here.
That's a great one. Yeah.
Setting a boundary, setting a time frame, putting a limit on it, I think is absolutely critical. But all of these things that we're talking about, it all comes down to communication, right? Mm-hmm. Again, so often we don't communicate, we don't talk about money, we're afraid to bring it up, we're afraid to be specific, and you have to be, you really do.
Mm-hmm. 651-461-9226 if you have a question or a comment. We're getting a lot of stories in. We're talking about boomerang adult children who come back home after spending some time out on their own. This texter writes about rent, and please ask them if renting is a waste of money when you have room for them to live at home. The person that they're talking about has lots of student loan debt. Maybe you can offer. I mean, what do you think of that idea? That okay, my young adult has $50,000 in student loan debt, has to pay $800 a month on the loan, really can't make it on their own. I mean, is there an opportunity? I guess, again, it goes back to limits and boundaries. You can give a person X amount of time to work on their student loan debt?
Yeah, absolutely. Or again, like I said in the first half of the show, maybe you pay that loan and your child pays you back, and that eases some of their burden. But, you know, this idea of they're going to live at home for a while, and is it going to be rent-free, or are they going to pay rent? Or what this texter is really asking about, and again, we talked about it in a little bit in the first half of the show, but I probably didn't do as deep of a dive as I could have. the idea of rent just being wasted money, flushed down the toilet, that monthly rent never comes back. It's gone. It's not invested in anything. It's not earning equity in anything. It's just gone. So the argument being, well, why wouldn't they live at home where they don't have to pay that rent and give them a chance to accumulate some money? I'm not opposed to that, either rent-free living or low rent. Maybe the rent you charge for them to live at home is significantly lower than what rent would be if they had to get their own place. But again, there's got to be a time frame where that ends. This is not a forever or a permanent solution to anything. And it's not good for anybody for this to be permanent. It's good for you, and it's not good for the kids. And just because you could afford it and it doesn't, you know, necessarily derail your retirement doesn't mean that it's a healthy way for either of you to live, either mom and dad or the kids. This should be a short-lived temporary solution to you can get them launched and back on their feet again. So, yes, living with you rent-free to accumulate some money, save some money, or low rent, or you helping them with student loan, doing an intrafamily loan where you charge them a lower interest rate. And that can be a win-win, right? If somebody's got a loan and they're paying 6%, 7%, 8% or higher credit cards or things like that, and you say, I will take care of your debt and you can pay me 5% instead of, you know, 7, 6, 8, whatever you were paying, that's a win-win because the 5% that I'm making is probably higher than I can get on a bank deposit. So I'm earning money for my generosity to my kids, but I'm not just giving them a handout. It's a win-win. It makes life more affordable for them. And maybe me as the provider of the loan, I charge an interest rate that's a little bit higher than I would get if that money were just sitting in the bank. And I've done that a lot over the years. I've coached clients to help loved ones with, again, what I call an intrafamily loan. Okay. Hey, Susie, I want to just go off the topic just for a minute.
Sure.
Because I want to make it clear that we'll take all financial questions. It just, they don't all have to be just on our topic today of boomerang children.
Okay.
And I want to hit on one that I'm getting a lot. Now, the inauguration of President-elect Trump is tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting a lot of questions on how is this going to change how I should invest? And the broader question is, what sectors or what parts of the economy do better when there's a Republican in the Oval Office or do better when the Democrat in the Oval Office? Or is there anything specific to President Trump that there's certain sectors of the economy that we should be avoiding or that we should be investing in? I'm getting variation of that question a lot. And again, as is always the case, and we talk about it a lot on the program, so much of our political beliefs influence what we think will happen economically, meaning if the candidate that you voted for wins, you're probably very optimistic. And if the candidate you voted for doesn't win, you're probably very pessimistic. But the statistical historical data suggests that markets go up regardless of who wins the election, that fundamentals like corporate earnings, inflation rate, the Fed, what they do with interest rates, these things influence the economy a lot more than political policy. And again, there's been times, and I have a whole list of examples, but I'm not going to run through all of them. They're pretty specific, but I will just say, painting, you know, with a broad brush, there have been times that based on what the economy thought would happen after the results of an election, that the exact opposite happens. Like the economy or the people on Wall Street thought, well, a Republican won, so we're going to see stock prices on private prisons and stock prices on gun manufacturers go up. And in fact, they go down. And so to look at any specific sector based on the inauguration and the new administration coming in tomorrow, I think that's going to be not irrelevant, but not really important to what we look at in terms of how we manage our portfolios. Again, I've said this a lot on the show, but I don't think I can say it too frequently. People look at the market, they look at the Dow, or they look at the S&P, and it's this arbitrary number. The Dow went up 300 points, or the Dow went down 300 points. And I think we lose sight sometimes of what we're actually investing in. We're investing in, hopefully, smart, innovative, efficient, well-run companies that will increase in value over time, regardless of who the president is. And there's other variables that definitely can impact stock prices, but most of these things have very little to do with political party, who's in charge, and policy. Now, taxes can have an impact. I would be naive to say there's no impact, but the things that really impact, again, I already mentioned some of them, but the GDP is going to be a factor. Interest rates and inflation are going to be a factor. The employment rate, these are all things when we look at the economy, and Peg and I have been saying this for weeks and weeks and weeks, you know, going into the election, there were a lot of people that because of the high inflation that we experienced over the last few years, felt like the economy was really bad. And I get that. If you're paying twice as much for a dozen eggs than you were a couple of years ago, and you can barely make ends meet, or you have to make, you know, decisions about what you can and can't buy at the grocery store, or do I fill the tank up, or do I just put in a half a tank of gas? I get that inflation was a big deal. But when we look at the global economy and we look at unemployment rates, we look at the growth in GDP, we actually have a really, really strong economy. And inflation now is down. We had a couple years there where it was running very, very high. Now it's low. But the reason it still feels worse than it actually is that while you may have a 401k plan that grew by, you know, 50% in the last 3 years, that money's not available to you to spend right now to pay for your more expensive eggs. So your overall financial situation might be a lot stronger than it was, you know, two, three, four years ago, but it doesn't feel like it is because that money's not money that you're using if it's in a retirement plan. So in terms of the inauguration tomorrow, I would say people, you know, stick with your plan. If your investments made sense before the election, they still make sense now. If you're going to make changes, it shouldn't be based on the incoming administration. It should be based on if you've gone through personal changes. You had a boomerang child to move back in the house, or you're going to retire, or you did retire, or you had some fall that you didn't expect, or somebody got sick, or whatever. There's life-changing events that should give you perhaps reason to look at your situation and say, do I want to make changes? But who won the election and the inauguration of a new president is not one of those reasons. You should not make changes or worry about sectors or what should I invest in or what should I not invest in just based on who won the election. But I'm getting variations of that question a lot, and so I wanted to bring that up today. But again, any and all questions. Doesn't just have to be on boomerang children.
All right. Yeah, very good. 651-461-9226. That's the number to call if you have a question for Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, also a financial advisor, each and every Sunday at this time. Back to the boomerang question. This person wrote a short time ago that they have three children and that they moved back in with their parents. He says, when I was married with three kids, we were moving across the state. We moved in with my folks about for a short time as our house was being built. We helped with chores and paid a bit of low rent. It really helped us to get moved. Intergenerational living can be beautiful and beneficial for all. Many houses in other countries are built with the intention that two or three generations will live in the same house with their own space, helping with house costs. I wonder, Bruce, and I know we have, you know, 4 minutes left, that I wonder how much that might evolve into something that becomes a necessity somewhat with an older generation and high cost of things. It's kind of an interesting idea.
Yeah, that's a great text. So a couple thoughts. Yes. I think that is going to become the new reality, the new normal, more than it has been historically. But also, again, I know there are cultures, there are religions, there are nationalities that embrace that sort of multi-generational family together. And if that's your philosophy and that's the way your family lives, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't mean to imply that kids should never be able to you know, live at home if that's your culture and that's what you do and that's what you embrace. And there is something sweet about that that I can see why that would be appealing. But the other thing I thought of, Susie, as you were reading that text, and this will probably take us home, earlier in the show I was boasting about my kids being launched and not needing help and not asking for help. But it occurred to me, I thought of my own situation, which I actually hadn't reflected on till we were, you know, kind of in the middle of this. When I first got out of college many years ago, I was originally a teacher. I got out of school in the middle of a school year, so I had to just find like a job as a waiter and other odd jobs just, you know, to make what I could until the following school year when I could look for a teaching job. And so I did live at home for a while after I graduated from college. I think it was just a couple of months. And my parents, God bless them, they're gone now. You know, they never asked for a penny. They let me come back. But I felt compelled. What I started doing is I started leaving cash like on this common area in the kitchen by the phone. I started leaving cash there without saying anything, and I'd look the next day and it would be gone. They took it. They gladly took it. So they didn't ask for it. When I left it, they took it. So I personally was kind of a boomerang for at least a short period of time, 45 years ago, whatever it was. And then my son, for a short period of time, same thing. He got out of school at a time of year where there probably weren't going to be people hiring, and he lived at home for a while. And my wife was very concerned about it, and I said, you know what? He doesn't want to be here any more than you want him, mm-hmm. but you got to let him kind of do this on his own time. He'll figure it out. And he did. And, you know, now he owns his own house and he's doing well. And again, both my kids are doing great, but this can happen to a lot of us. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing to feel guilty about or ashamed about, but just have a plan. And you know, the highlight of the day was Sue's call, because she explained it and did it better than anything I said today.
Have a plan, set a deadline, have boundaries, and give them some guidance if you can. Listen, I understand you guys on wealthenhancement.com/yourmoney. You can find more of this information, educational resources related to our topic. Again, wealthenhancement.com/yourmoney. Now, if you did not get your question answered, Bruce, they can call 1-888-6-ADVICE or email questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great week, Bruce.
You too.
Bye-bye.